Om Parthaya Pratibhojitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kritikam Purana Munima Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanu Santatami Bhagavad Gita Bhagavadvaishini. So let's start from verse 1 again, chapter 7. Om Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Maya Saktamana Partha, Maya Saktamana Partha, Yogam Yunjan Madashriyaha, Yogam Yunjan Madashriyaha, Asam Shayam Samakramam, Asam Shayam Samakramam, Yathat Nyasya Sitakshrinu, Yathat Nyasya Sitakshrinu. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Sri Bhagavan says, Mayi Asakta Manaha Partha Yogam Yunjan Mat Ashreha Asamshiyam Samadhramam Yatha Nyasisi Tetshrinu. Bhagavan is starting this chapter 7, really answering what he has opened up in the preceding verse. Or in the preceding verse, the last verse of chapter 6, what he says is, among all of the yogis, that one who has Shraddha, the one who, having Shraddha, worships me, Vajate Mam, is focused on me, who's focused on me, how, whose mind, whose antaratmana, means with a mind that is centered on me, that's the Vajate, that's the worship, for that person who has Shraddha. Shraddha means they have Shraddha in Bhagavan. They accept Bhagavan is there. And so, it's accepting Bhagavan is there, they have a devotion, a Shraddha, toward Bhagavan. And that becomes their primary focus, is that relationship with Ishwara. And so he says here, for that person who worships me in this way, having Shraddha, he says, in my opinion, me mataha, that person is the most exalted among all of the yogis. And so now that brings about the question, well, that one who has Shraddha in, so Krishna, Bhagavan Krishna is saying, the one who has Shraddha in me, who worships me, then the next question is, well, who are you? Who is the Ishwara? Who are you, Krishna? What is your nature for me to have that relationship and that devotion? What are you like? That's the next logical question that would come after this, because the person who in Krishna's mind is the most exalted of all of the yogis is the one who is centered on me. Me is Krishna, on the Lord, centered on the Lord, right? And who has that karma yoga buddhi, basically. So here he says, those who mayi asakta manaha, the one whose mind, manas, manaha, namative singular, one whose mind is asakta, means totally focused, committed. Asakta means it's committed to me, mayi. The one whose mind is committed to me, yoga yunjan, doing the yoga here, karma yoga, doing, being engaged in karma yoga, that karma yoga buddhi, that one whose mind is committed to me, being engaged, being committed to, being engaged in the karma yoga, practice of karma yoga, mad ashriyaha, and being one for whom I am the ashriya. Now, there's two things here. the one who is committed to me means you are what I want. Swamiji does a nice bhasha on this. I'm committed to you. It's like I'm committed to this job. This job is what I want to achieve. I'm committed to this skill, gaining this skill or this capacity. This capacity is what I want to achieve. Now here, what I'm committed to, what I want, is to become whole. I want Bhagavan. I want to gain this knowledge. I want moksha. So the one who is committed to Bhagavan, to knowing the Lord, to becoming whole. And the only way that one can become whole, again, is through knowledge. I can't become whole through any type of activity, because the body, the mind, the sense organs, everything that makes me an individual is limited. And so there's no becoming whole or becoming complete in reference to anything I might do or know about this jiva upadhi, because it is by nature limited. But to become whole, to become full, to become complete, is not going to be something I can accomplish by action, because it's by nature incomplete. So it's only something I can accomplish by knowledge. And so here, the one who is committed to me, whose focus is on me, I am their ashriya, I am the means for their attaining that. There is no other means, and also there's no way to attain Bhagavan except through knowledge. Right? Because the upadhi is limited. So the only way of gaining Ishwara is to recognize really I am Ishwara. It's like this. The only way to gain wholeness, to become full, to become complete, to become liberated, is to recognize I am that. Because everything that the reason I want to become that is because I've identified myself with things that are inherently not that. In other words, the physical body will die. That's its nature. No amount of knowledge will stop that. In fact, your knowledge, which is true to the vastu, true to the thing, will just tell you, yes, you're correct, this body will die. It's not going to tell you, oh, know this body and it won't die. How did I get? Know this body and it will die. Know the mind and yes, it will change. Right? So everything about the jiva upadhi is subject to limitation and death, and knowledge will only substantiate that. It won't liberate you from it, nor will any type of action liberate you from it. And so here, the person who is the mumukshu, remember the karma yogi, the person who is the mumukshu or the sannyasi, is the one who is committed to moksha. And so for that person, the one who is committed to moksha, he says now, my asakta manaha, the one who is committed to me. And for that one, mad ashriyaha, I am their means. There is no other means. There is no other way to achieve me other than through me. And the only way to achieve me through me as the means is by jnanam, is by knowledge. Because there's no way that the limited can become limitless or the bound can become free. If it's bound by nature, it can't become free. Okay? So here, he says, that the being one who is committed to me, who has me for their ashriya, I become the means for attaining me, then practicing this karma yoga, meaning doing everything that's necessary to gain the antikarna shuddhi, then he says, being like this, hey Arjuna, he says, listen to that by which you will know me, samagram, wholly and without doubt. Being one whose mind is committed to me, who is doing the karma yoga, engaged in karma yoga, this is the way you're living your life, and who has surrendered to me really as the means for attaining that. Listen now, tachrunu, listen to that, which I'm going to tell you, that means which I'm going to tell you, by which you will know me wholly, samagram, and asamshiram, without any doubt. And so furthermore, he says, jnanam, jnanam te hamsavijnanam, jnanam te hamsavijnanam, idam vakshyam yasheshataha, idam vakshyam yasheshataha, yajnyatva neha bhuyunyat, yajnyatva neha bhuyunyat, jnatavyam avishishyate, avishishyate. Natavyam avashishyate. Jnanam te aham savijnanam idam vakshami asheshatah yat jnatva na iha bhuyaha anyat jnatavyam avashishyate. He says, I will tell you, te aham vakshami, I will tell you, asheshatah, not leaving nothing out, without leaving anything out, I will tell you completely, this knowledge, idam jnanam, this knowledge means this, this knowledge by which you will know me as Bhagavan, you will know Ishwar fully, completely, without any doubt. He says, I will tell you completely, without leaving anything out, idam jnanam, this knowledge means the indirect knowledge, jnanam, because savijnanam, this knowledge I will tell you, make it clear who Ishwara is. Savijnanam, together with the vijnanam. Vijnanam means, the savijnanam is all, the vijnanam, the jnanam is, I'll make this knowledge understandable to you, but along with vijnanam, where you have aparoksha jnanam, where you recognize directly and immediately my being, my nature. Right? Because this is the situation with understanding Ishwara. From the standpoint of just, first of all, he uses these two words. I'm going to just make this clear. In this verse, he uses these two words, jnanam and vijnanam. If you use jnanam, knowledge, just by itself, it can also mean aparoksha jnanam, direct, immediate knowledge. It depends on the context. You know, aparoksha jnanam means I actually recognize, I see directly, immediately, it's not indirect. It's not like somebody talking to me about Ishwar, like they're talking about China, you know, where it's an indirect knowledge where I have a distant appreciation, a conceptual appreciation, but I don't see it. Now, for understanding, so now we've got, he uses that jnanam, but he uses it with vijnanam. So now if he uses jnanam and vijnanam together, now, vijnanam is going to be different. It's a vishesha jnanam. It's a particular type of knowledge versus jnanam. So we have jnanam and vijnanam. So jnanam he's using as indirect knowledge here. Vijnanam he's using as aparoksha jnanam, direct, immediate knowledge, where there's an immediate recognition. And so now, in reference to understanding Ishwara, gaining knowledge of Ishwara, some of that understanding is going to be paroksha. In other words, indirect. In other words, you yourself can't experience the whole Maya Upadhi, all of the different levels of reality that may, and the infinite manifestation of knowledge of Ishwara's Upadhi. You can't experience the cyclical nature, the coming and going of the creation from beginningless time. All of this is revealed in the Shruti. It's all Vedic. All this whole understanding of Ishwara's Swarupa in terms of the Maya Upadhi, you know, with all of the ins and outs, all of the things that there are to understand about that in terms of the infinite manifestation of knowledge, that will be paroksha jnanam. It will be understood through the Vedas. And understanding it through the Vedas, it's all illogical and it makes sense. But the aparoksha jnanam is the understanding of what is the truth of this infinite manifestation. The Satchit Ananda, the very being of this infinite manifestation. The identity of this, of the self, of this infinite manifestation, which is Brahman. The identity of that self with the Atma that I am. Where I say, I am. This is the aparoksha jnanam that allows me to say, I am Ishwara. To be able to say, I am Ishwara, that has to be aparoksha jnanam. Right? Because I can never say, I am Ishwara in terms of the whole, this in identification with this physical body. This physical body is part of Ishwara, it's not Ishwara. And so I can't say, I am Ishwara from the standpoint of the Maya Upadhi. In the Maya Upadhi, there's what we call the Sameshti Upadhi, the infinite manifestation of knowledge, and then there's my limited Upadhi. And so from the standpoint of the limited Upadhi, which is part of Maya, I can only say I'm part of the total. And from my vantage point, as a jiva within the infinite creation, which we call Ishvara, there's no possibility of this limited mind having a vision embracing the infinite manifestation. So I can appreciate it through the unfoldment of the teaching, the unfoldment of the Upanishads, how it's revealed in the Vedas. I can appreciate Ishvara's form, the cyclical nature of this projection of manifest knowledge. But the aparoksha jnanam, that I am Ishvara, that myself, which is the truth of this body, mind, sense organs, that this very Atman, this very self, is Ishvara. Like this. Do I say, as a jnani, do I say, if one who has self-knowledge, that I am the body or I am the Atman? They would say, I am the Atman, I am the self. And this body, mind, sense organs is the Maya Upadhi, right? So if I'm going to say, if I ask, who are you? And we're talking as jnanis, you'll say, I am the self, I am the Atman. Of course, if we're in Vyavahara somewhere, we won't say that. I'm Sheshadri. But where's the ahankara for the jnani? Where's the I? It's resting in the Atman. That's who I am. I am the Atman. And what do you think Ishvara says? You were to ask Ishvara, who are you? I am the Maya Upadhi. No. He'll say, I am Brahman. I am Brahman. Because satyam mitya, Brahman the self, is the truth, it is the being that is there, right? As the truth, as the self, of the sameshti, of the total Maya Upadhi. That Brahman, which is the self of the total Maya Upadhi, is the self of every Upadhi in it, right? The self of the total, is the self of everything that makes up the total. It's like water is the self of the ocean, right? And so water is the self of all of the waves that make up the ocean. And so all of us, all of these upadis, this is an upadi, this is an upadi, this is an upadi, this is upadi, everything's an upadi, right? Vyashti upadis, all limited upadis, all limited conditioning adjuncts that are part and parcel of the total, right? And so when I, through jnanam, through knowledge, through teaching, I am able to give the body, the mind, the sense organs back to Ishvara. Not that it wasn't with him in the beginning, but nevertheless, through knowledge, I can give it back and recognize this body, this mind, the sense organs, the ahankara, the ajnanam, the jnanam, all of it. Everything that exists within duality is part and parcel of Ishvara. And myself, which is the self of this upadhi, right, the Satchitananda, which is my being, which is the very me of this upadhi, it is this me that is the me of the whole. And so now, is that aparoksha or paroksha? If it's paroksha, indirect knowledge, then you're saying the Upanishads say there is such a self. That's paroksha. But here, that paroksha has to convert into aparoksha. That's the vision of the Upanishads is to make you recognize the nature of your being, not indirectly. To recognize that this Atma that I am is in fact the self of the whole, is the self of all beings. That is aparoksha. Now, even here, aparoksha, I can have aparoksha jnanam of Ishvara, even in terms of the little piece of the Maya Upadhi that I experience. Right? I don't experience Ishvara as an infinite Maya Upadhi, but I experience some of it through my sense organs, through my means of knowledge that I have available to me. And I experience this Maya Upadhi that I have direct knowledge with as something which is infinitely, that has what Swamiji calls an infinite order. It means this world that I experience is one manifestation. It's not many manifestations, it's one manifestation. And by logical extension, into the realm of indirect knowledge, but by logical extension, I can extend this orderly manifestation infinitely to go to the very ends of the whole Maya Upadhi, the whole Sameshti Maya Upadhi. The order that I experience here and the Mityatva that I experience here can be logically extended to the whole infinite creation, because why not? If myself, the conscious being, if this me, if I understand this me as the self of all beings in this room, right, if I see it, that I am the self of all beings in this room, then I am the self of all beings. If myself is yourself, then myself is all selves. If myself can be yourself, then there is nothing that can get in the way of myself being all selves. Because the only way that myself can be yourself is if my being is free from duality and free from objectification. Right? If I'm not able to be objectified, then I can't enter into this Maya Upadhi as an object. If the Atma, the self, can't be objectified, it can't enter into this creation as a limited being. Nor can this creation enter into me, right? Because I'm not objectifiable. The creation can batter around and converse with other things within its realm. But the self, the existence, the sat-chit, which is the very my being, and which cannot be objectified, can't be battered around because it's not objectifiable, and so nothing can touch it in any way. Nor can it enter into. And when we do the Driktrisha Viveka, what we discover is that just as myself is free from objectification, yourself is free from objectification. And that being so, how can the two selves be divided? What's going to separate me from you? Not something that can be objectified. Right? Something that can be looked at, that exists within duality. So there's nothing to make me other than you. Now that's, we can do that in just in reference to ourselves in this room, but then what if I were to say, yeah, but the Martian on Mars must be different. Or the person over in China, they must have a different self. Well, the question is, do they have a self? If they have a self, then it's not going to be different. It's going to be subject to the same subject-object differentiation. It itself is not going to be objectifiable, right? And so it's going to be in the same situation. So the self that I am is the self of the person in China, is the self of the person in Africa, is the self of the Martian, is the self of our animals, is the self of our plants. It's a self which is not limited by duality. So when we say the self, yourself, is limitless, what we mean is not something in terms of space or time, because that exists within duality. We say the self is limitless because it's not limited by duality. There is no limitation to it in terms of time, in terms of space, or anything. So this self that is Krishna, that is Bhagavan, he says, I will give you that vignana. I will give you that direct approach of recognition of that. So Swamiji looks at this in two ways. Krishna here can be talking about, I see from himself saying, this knowledge is aparoksha for me. It is very clear to me. And I can make that aparoksha. I will make this aparoksha jnanam, this which is vijnanam for me, I will make it vijnanam for you. Mm-hmm. And the other way to take it is just the regular way that he also takes it as, in this teaching tradition, right? This knowledge is a recognition of yourself. It is the recognition of yourself, which is vijnanam. It's aparoksha. So I will make you know. I will make you understand me as Ishvara, my infinite Maya Upadhi. I'll describe that and make you see that. But I'll make you have the direct, immediate knowledge of myself also. And that is the sat-chit. That is the truth of the whole manifestation. So here he says, now this, because together with the vijnanam, I'm going to tell you this without leaving anything out, he says, and yet nyatwa, having known this, iha, here itself, having gained this knowledge, here itself, na anyat nyatavyam ashishyate, there is to be nothing left out that is to be known. Anyat na, anyat means another, na buyaha, there is no other thing nyatavyam to be known. Nothing will remain that needs to be known.
What a dramatic beginning.
And so here, this nyatavyam also, there's nothing There's two things, way to take this. There's nothing that remains here to be known, that needs to be known. Because once you know, you know, I use the, if you know the, of the animal crackers, that they're all graham crackers, and every animal cracker in the animal cracker box is graham cracker, then you know what is to be known. There's nothing more. There's nothing of importance now to be known, because you know what the truth of the whole thing is, right? So there's nothing else to be known in terms of importance, and also there's nothing else to be known, right? You know what the truth is. So knowing this, understanding me as Ishwara, understanding the Ishwara Upadi, the Ishwara Sarupa, as we'll get into now, and understanding it as aparoksha and paroksha, knowing this, there's nothing else. There's nothing outside of this purview that needs to be known or is useful to know. So either way you can take. So now he says, Manushanam sahasreshu, Manushanam sahasreshu, kaschit yatati siddhaye, kaschit yatati siddhaye, yatatam api siddhanam, yatatam api siddhanam, kaschit mam veti tatvataha, kaschit mam veti tatvataha. Manushanam sahasreshu, kaschit yatati siddhaye, yatatam api siddhanam, kaschit mam veti tatvataha. Says Manushanam sahasreshu, among thousands of people, Swami says like one in a million, right? Among thousands of people, kaschit, just one, among millions, we say among millions in English, we say among millions, you know, so among thousands of people, kaschit, just someone, yatati siddhiye, strives for moksha, only one among millions, makes any effort, yatati means to make an effort, makes any effort at all for moksha, for liberation, one among millions. So he's telling this to Arjuna. So. And then he says, yatatam api siddhanam. And among those who are siddhas means they're striving for moksha. For those who are siddhas means siddhiye, means they're striving for siddhi. So of those siddhas, means of those mamukshus, now of those ones who are working toward this moksha, so of those siddhas who are making an attempt, or who are striving, so it says, even among those siddhas, kaschit mam veti tattvataha, only one knows me really in truth. So here this is called it's a praise to Arjuna. He's making this knowledge very enticing, very important, you know, very special, you know, very difficult to, something very difficult to achieve. It's something that most people don't, most human beings don't even think to go after it. They make no attempts at all. They don't even think to, they don't have the question. And then even those people who are making an attempt, who do want liberation, even among those, only one, some person, only one among millions of those people, of those few people, really knows me in reality. And so that's what I was saying last week when Swamiji interpreted this. He's like, so poor Arjuna, he must be afraid now. You know, thinking, well, what about me? Am I going to be one who can achieve this? But then on the other hand, Arjuna was such a confident person, you know, and he was so concentrated and so bent now on understanding this knowledge that he probably took it in the way that what Swamiji says that Krishna, the Lord, would mean here, which would be to excite him, you know, to entice him, to make him want to come after it, because to realize how special, you know, and how extraordinary this knowledge is. And so this is now, these three verses really just introduce this chapter. So now he says, Bhumirapo nalo vayuhu, Bhumirapo nalo vayuhu, Kamano pudhirevacha, Kammano buddhireva cha ahankara iti yanne.
Ahankara iti yanne.
Dinna prakriti ashtada.
Dinna prakriti ashtada.
Bhumihi apaha analaha vayuhu. Kam manaha buddhihi eva cha. Ahankaraha iti yamme bhinna prakriti ashtada. Okay, before we go into this, I'm going to explain a little bit about the use of the word prakriti here. Prakriti can mean the cause, also the material cause, except when it's the prakriti, the karana. And so Ishvara Bhagavan, Krishna, is going to unfold this prakriti in twofold prakriti. One is called Svabhava Prakriti, which is going to be this first verse. The next verse is going to talk about Swarupa Prakriti. The Svabhava Prakriti is the Maya Upadhi. Means this Maya, which we call Prakriti, which composed of this three guna sattva rajasthamas, which manifests as this creation. So the Maya is something which projects the creation, resolves the creation, projects the creation. It's responsible for all the nama rupa, for all of the names and forms. So if we say the Svabhava Prakriti, it's that which is responsible for the manifestation of knowledge, for the manifestation of duality, for the manifestation of the creation. That's the Svabhava Prakriti. It's one. There's another Prakriti, which is also Karana, which is called the Swarupa Prakriti. And that Swarupa Prakriti is the Satchit Ananda, is the Satchit, the existence, the Satchit Ananda, the Satsang Jnanam Anantam, the consciousness of the Brahman, which is changeless, which is the very Upadana Karanam, which is the very being of this creation. Without the being of the creation, there is no Maya. Right? There can't be Maya. There can't be Mitya without Satyam. And so the Maya Prakriti is what's responsible for the manifestation of the creation, but what we call the Swarupa Prakriti is the very being of the Maya, right? The Maya is responsible for names and forms. The self is responsible for the being which those names and forms enjoy. So here, he says, starting with this first verse, he's talking about what we call the Prakriti, which is the Svabhava Prakriti, that which is responsible for the manifestation of names and forms. Okay? So let's look at what it says. He says, Bhumihi, the earth, apaha, water, analaha, fire, vayuhu, air, kam, space, manas, the mind, buddhihi, the intellect, and the ahankara, the I notion, iti iyam, thus this, me bina, prakriti ashtada. Thus he says, my prakriti, me prakritihi, binna is divided, prakriti is feminine, binna, my prakriti is divided in an eightfold way. See how he starts, my prakriti, this is my prakriti, which is divided in an eightfold way. The five elements, the manas, the buddhi, and the ahankara. I don't need to look at something here. Okay, for now. He's talking about the whole Maya Upadhi, so I want to tell you how he's using. He's talking about the Sameshti Maya Upadhi. So how he's using manas, according to Shankara, he says, manaha iti, manasaha karanam ahankaraha grihate. By this word manas, he's referring to the cause of the mind, which he calls the ahankara, the I notion. So just hold this in your mind for a minute. The manas he's talking about, for manas here, he's just talking about the I notion. Buddhihi iti ahankara karanam mahatattvam. For buddhi, he's talking about Hiranyagarbha. Okay? So I'll make this clear in a minute. But just takes buddhi as Hiranyagarbha. And now the mahat tattvam. And now ahankara iti, avidya samyuktam avyaktam. The ahankara is talking about the avyaktam, the maya in its causal condition. And so here, let me see. Okay, I have to keep this in my mind how he's using it here. Swamiji talks about this in his Bhasha too, so you can get it from there. Okay. One way to understand this is to read the whole thing backwards in terms of the projection of the creation. Take the ahankara as the avyakta, the maya upadi in its unmanifest condition, which is actually ajnanam. So the maya upadi in its unmanifest condition is what he's calling ahankara here in the verse. Then we go to buddhi. From buddhi now, he goes to the mahat, Hiranyagarbha. So now, when the maya upadi manifests, comes into manifestation, right? What comes first is the Hiranyagarbha. So from the avyakta, from the unmanifest, maya manifests and becomes the subtle manifest knowledge. And from there, comes, out of the, after the Hiranyagarbha, comes the ahankara. So we go from the maya upadi, an unmanifest condition, to the manifest, Hiranyagarbha, to the ahankara, to the five elements. And so by this, all that he's doing is sweeping the creation. He's sweeping the manifest creation from the avyakta, from the unmanifest maya, to the manifest maya that includes the ahankara of the individual. It's all the way through from the unmanifest to Hiranyagarbha, to the individual, and then to the five elements. So also remember, in the maya upadi, the maya is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas. I'm not going to go through this whole panchakarma now, but just to make you understand. Maya is composed of sattva, rajas, and tamas. And when it manifests in the form of the five elements. So these five elements are what? Earth, water, going backwards. Let's go forwards, going backwards in the verse. Space, air, fire, water, earth. So that's the manifestation of the five elements. So what we call the ten mantras are the five elements before they've gone through this process of grossification. They're just the pure five elements. So when the creation, when the maya upadi manifests as Hiranyagarbha, we have the five elements in their pure form and a sattva, rajas, and tamas aspect of those three. Right? So because maya is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas, and it projects in the creation in the form of the five elements, each of the five elements will have a sattva, rajas, and tamas aspect. The tamas aspect of these five ten mantras, these five subtle elements, goes through a process of panchakarma to become fivefold, to become this physical creation. And so all of this is included here, right? The Hiranyagarbha, the intelligent principle, the ahankara, the jiva, everything is included in this one little line here. So in this, what he's saying is that my prakriti, okay, now another thing about this. When we think of prakriti also, we're usually thinking of prakriti in terms of, almost as a synonym really, to the maya upadi. When we think of prakriti, we think of maya. When we think of maya, we think of that which manifests as this whole infinite creation. That's what we mean by maya. The Sankhyas use the word prakriti in a different way. They take the prakriti to be something that is independent, has an independent existence of its own. But the prakriti, for them also, the prakriti is made of sattva, rajas, tamas, is cyclical, and presents in the term of the in the form of the five elements and goes through this process of becoming fivefold. Same as maya. The only difference is that for maya, when we use maya in Advaita Vedanta, when we use the term prakriti as maya, that maya is mithya. It has no independent being, right? It is dependent for its being on Brahman. And so Brahman, Krishna is going to say, is for us there's two prakritis. In Sankhya, there's one Prakriti and there's the Purusha, the Purushas. But for me, he's speaking as a Vedanta now, and in Vedic, he's unfolding this knowledge and saying, there's this Prakriti which you know, this Prakriti which manifests as the whole infinite creation. And that Prakriti is made of the five elements, right, and the Avyakta, the unmanifest Maya, and then the Maya manifest as the Mahat, as Hiranyagarbha, and as the Ahankara, as the I notion. That's response. That Prakriti, right, that's me, that is my Prakriti. It's my Prakriti, which is becoming divided in an eightfold way. But he says now in this next verse, but there's another Prakriti. Okay? That's in this next verse. Let's read it, and then I'll probably not do it. Aparayam ikas twanyam. Aparayam ikas twanyam. Prakritim vidime param. Prakritim vidime param. Jiva bhutam mahabaho. Jiva bhutam mahabaho. Yayedam dharyate jagat. Yayedam dharyate jagat. Apara iyam itaha tu. Anyam prakritim vidime param. Jiva bhutam mahabaho. Yaya idam dharyate jagat. I'll just translate this and then these two verses we'll do more next week. He says, vidime prakritim param. May you know my prakriti, which is param, which is my other prakriti, anyam prakritim, my other prakriti, which is superior. Right? He says, apara iam. There is a prakriti. Apara iyam itaha anyam prakriti. He says, there is another prakriti. This is apara prakriti, this first one. It is the lower prakriti. Apara iyam. This is apara. This is lower. This prakriti that has become eight, that is divided in an eightfold way. May you know another prakriti, one different from this, which is param, which is higher. He says, this param prakritim, jiva bhutam, is the very nature of the jiva. This prakriti is the nature, is your nature, is the very being of the jiva, by which idam dharyate jagat, by which this entire universe is held, is sustained. This para prakriti, which is the swarupa, the satchitananda is the para prakriti. This para prakriti sustains the entire creation. And the nature of this prakriti, it is different than this Maya prakriti. It is different than this Maya. It is other than this Maya. It is different. This is the upara. This is my prakriti. Both are me. But there's the Maya, right? There's the Maya, and then there's that which is other, which is param. And that which is other is your nature, jiva bhutam. And that which is other, this Satchitananda prakriti, is to reality, it is the truth, it is what sustains this entire creation. So there's a Mahavakya coming in here. So in these two verses, 4, 5, and then in 6, we're going to be talking about the difference between prakriti, this upara prakriti and para prakriti, this lower prakriti and this higher prakriti. You know, one actually goes through modification. This manifestation, this upara prakriti, goes through modification. The sattva, rajas, and tamas goes through all kinds of modifications to become the world, the universe. But the para prakriti never goes through any modification, and yet it also is the karana. It also is the cause of this apara prakriti. It is the very being, but it itself is vivarta. It goes through no modification at all. So now we're going to be introducing these two terms, the parinama karana, the cause which goes through modification, and the vivarta upadana karana, the material cause that is the very self of the creation but goes through no modification. That's the satya mitya. The Atman, which is the self of all of this, goes through no change, no modification to become this creation. Whereas the Maya is going, is nothing but modification. It's sattva, rajas, and tamas going through infinite modification to become this manifest knowledge. But the truth of this manifest projection is the Atma, which is Brahman, which itself goes through no modification whatsoever to become this. And that is your very being, Jiva Bhutam. It has, its being is, it is the very being of the Jiva. Okay, so let's stop there.
That's clear.
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Got really the significance of the upper workshop jnana. But I still don't understand the differentiation between jnana and upper workshop jnana. It's like, what are we trying, what are we really after? And there's different differentiation between indirect and direct knowledge.
Well, because he made the distinction, there's a lot of things to understand about Ishvara that the Vedas have to say that you actually can't have direct knowledge of, that you can appreciate. In other words, in light of your direct immediate knowledge, it all makes sense. But you yourself can't have a direct immediate knowledge of. You can't see it. You can't experience it. Like you can't experience the whole infinite Ishvara Swarupa, you know, or the nature of how the creation works in an infinite way. But the Vedas describe a lot of that, you know. And Krishna is in this section is going to describe a lot of that. But you will at the same time be able to have direct immediate knowledge of the truth of it, of the satyam mitya, of yourself being the very self of all names and forms, of the infinite order of the creation, as an extension of the infinite order that you experience just within your immediate framework. So there's a lot that is aparoksha, but there's a lot that's paroksha also, that is very meaningful. It's indirect, but that doesn't mean that it's not knowledge, because because that knowledge in reference to what is direct makes so much sense and stands and is so logical. So you accept it with shraddha, but you also see it and understand it.
But the approach of jnana,
that's immediately experiential, because yourself, the knowledge is true to your immediate experience. You see, the thing is, for aparoksha, the self Brahman is aparoksha. With or without knowledge, it's aparoksha. It's immediately present, it's self-luminous, it's self-evident, it doesn't require anything to make it shine, to make its being self-evident. Mm-hmm. So the Atma already is aparoksha. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's already self-evident. But there's ajnana, right? So you have the self-evident Atma, because you say, and this is how that plays out. You say you have self-evident Atma plus ajnana plus ignorance. So then you say, I exist, I am a conscious being, I experience ananda, but I don't know what the existence is, where it is. I don't know if there's many, if it's subject to death. I don't know if the consciousness I experience is a bubble of consciousness or it's the same in both. I have no idea. But the consciousness is immediately recognizable by me. It's, I am that. So that's the aparoksha term. But it's aparoksha plus ajnanam. So now, when we gain aparoksha jnanam, that means that now my buddhi has direct, immediate recognition of the nature of myself, which is itself aparoksha and not away from the buddhi. So the buddhi has direct, immediate recognition, the ajnanam has been removed, of the aparoksha. It has aparoksha jnanam of the aparoksha atma. Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean by aparoksha, the word? As self-evident?
Yeah. Aparoksha means direct, right?
Yeah, direct self-evident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some sense of that.
Yeah. Okay, so yourself is self-evident, even as an ajnani. Because you exist. I exist. I'm a conscious being. That's your self-experience. But because of ignorance, you superimpose that self-experience on your body, your mind, your sense organs, and so you take your being to be limited because you know the body, mind, sense organs are limited, right? And so because of ajnanam, the mind takes itself to be that self-evident me. That's the problem. And so now I have to gain knowledge of that self. And we say the knowledge that we gain is aparoksha jnanam, because it's not pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means direct knowledge through sense perception. I can't know myself through sense perception. I can only know other things through sense perception. But nevertheless, I still gain direct, immediate knowledge of myself because the self is self-evident and my mind is not away from it. And so with knowledge, I can differentiate the mind from the self that's illumining it. And so I gain direct, immediate knowledge of myself. Now, when I gain direct, immediate knowledge of myself, I'm also here. Now, this Atma that I am is in a context. The context of this body, mind, sense organs, universe. And so now I have to say, what is the nature of this Sat-Chit that is me in relationship to this universe that is directly, immediately being experienced by me? So now just say in this room, this is the universe that is being immediately experienced by me through my sense organs and also the thoughts and moods in my mind. Those are all immediately experienced. So now I have to recognize, what is the relationship of me to this? And I'm still in the arena of direct, immediate knowledge, because this is not away from me. And so I can have a direct understanding of the satyam mitya, the apparent, the dependent nature of this reality that I experience in my sense organs on the Atma. I can have the direct recognition of this body, mind, sense organs, moods, emotions, ahankara, belonging to and part and parcel of this duality that I'm directly experiencing. Right? And then this whole thing that I'm directly experiencing, I can recognize as having no substance of its own, because through analysis I can see that there is, it's infinitely divisible. And the only common denominator that this infinitely divisible creation has, that's coming and going, coming into being, going out of being, the only common denominator that it has is the Sat-Chit, which is me, which is not objectifiable. And that's all something that I can directly, immediately recognize. Because the self, yourself, is directly, immediately recognizable as your own being, it's aparoksha. And this creation that you experience is not away from you. Now, what I can experience is Bhagavan's infinite form. I can't experience the creation coming and going from into manifestation and out of manifestation, or all of the worlds, or how reincarnation works, and all of these kind of things, the different heaven worlds and all of these things. Those are all described in the Vedas. You know, and in this second section, Bhagavan is going to be doing some of these descriptions. So he says, I will tell you all about it. Both jnanam, the indirect knowledge, and the aparoksha jnanam. And for us, of course, liberation, what you need is the aparoksha jnanam. Aparoksha jnanam is enough. Because you can even recognize the Ishwara in this little piece of Ishwara that we experience. You don't need to have the whole vision of the infinite, Ishwara's infinite upadhi. this is enough. This is your participation in Ishvara's infinite upadi, and everything can be infinitely extended. Any piece of logic that is true here has infinite extension. You see what I mean?
Yeah, it's like a micro and macrocosm.
Mm-hmm. Satya mitya, infinite extension. If the self is non-dual here, it's non-dual. Right? The self is non-objectifiable here, it's non-objectifiable. If it's free from time and space here, it's free from time and space. It doesn't matter wherever time and space is, it doesn't matter. This is free from time and space. Time and space belongs to duality. You know?
So it's like aparoksha jnanam is something that you, I mean, it's sort of like it comes as a result of analysis and logic?
Well, no. The aparoksha jnanam comes to you because of the teaching methodology that is also very, there is a lot of analysis, there is a lot of logic. But the teaching methodology of the Upanishad, what it is doing is taking you step by step by step through different what we call prakriyas, teaching methodologies, that take you step by step by step to recognizing your own being, who you are, this Atma, this self that you are, in relationship to itself and in relationship to this creation that you find yourself in. So you have to see it, because now, until that teaching takes place, all the means of knowledge you have at your disposal are your five sense organs, right, that put you in the middle of this creation. So the means of knowledge that you have available to you are all based on sense perception that then allow you to gain more and more sophisticated knowledge of duality. But you don't have the means available to gain knowledge of non-duality that can allow you to say, I am all of this. Right? You can do different exercises and whatnot to differentiate yourself from the body, the mind, the sense organs. There's different yogic techniques, there's meditative techniques where you can differentiate, you know, consciousness from things that you objectify. But it's a different, there's a different step, that a jump that has to be made to the recognition that the consciousness that I am is the self of all, that I am the whole.
Well, how do we make that jump? I mean,
well, that's through the different teaching prakriyas that we use and that the Upanishad uses. Because Vedanta is, I am the whole. It's not just that I am Satchit. It's that Satchit is the whole. You can say, I am Satchit Ananda. I am Brahman. But that's not enough. You can't just sit there as Brahman, you know, Satchit Ananda without the creation. You have to be able to say, I am this creation. You have to be able to say, I am Ishvara. That means that the self that I am, the conscious being that I am, is the self of all of this. Right? It's not enough just to differentiate consciousness from the body, mind, sense, organs. Now you have this consciousness here, and you have this body, mind, sense, organs here. That's not Vedanta. You need to be able to do that initially in order to recognize the freedom of your being. But then you have to see that this being that I am is this.
But that's not an experience that you have, right? That's sort of a conclusion that you reach.
No, it's actually an experience. Like for instance, let me explain. Because you have a dehatma buddhi, means you're totally identified with the body, when you're looking out at this room, you'll say, well, I'm looking out through my five sense organs, I'm experiencing myself as this body, and I'm seeing all of you. So here's the subject, there's the objects. That's my experience. And now I'm saying, that is your experience on one level, but there is another experience here that needs to be recognized. And that is that all of this, everything in this room, including the body, the mind, the sense organs, the thoughts, the ahankara, the moods, the emotions, and all of the perceptions, equally exist in consciousness. That wall exists in my consciousness, the consciousness which is me, as much as this body does. That this whole room, in fact, has for its being only consciousness. That my being, the me, is not contained. That's aparoksha. But we're so used to not seeing that because we're only seeing through our eyes and our sense organs that to see that, what I'm saying right now, what has to happen is that you have to have fully differentiated your own swarupa, your own conscious being, the me, from this body, mind, sense organs. Because if that differentiation has not been made, it's not, you can't free it up. You can't recognize it as being the self of all of this. Because you're only used to identifying consciousness in reference to the body, mind, sense organs. But actually, the consciousness that you are is not contained at all. And it's aparoksha. It's immediate self-evident. And so if I just sit, well, I can say, let's sit quietly, and see if this me, your sense of me, is contained by anything. It isn't. But to be able to, but see, this is why the prakriyas, the teaching methodologies, are so important, because the identification with me and the body is so much that until I've differentiated it with the subject-object differentiation and the different prakriyas that we use, you don't realize that your me is actually changeless and central to all experience, not just this body. Like, say, in this room, this three-dimensional room, if I'm looking at it from the vantage point of this body, then here I'm on the, what side? The north side. I'm on the north side, you're on the south side. You know, here's the east, and here's the west, here's the east. And so we're on different sides, and so I would think that the me is over here, and your me is over there, and your me is over there. But actually, there's only one me. There's only one me experience, which is me. The me experience belongs to me. Right? But now, where's this me located? It is me. Right? You say, well, it's located in me. Yes. It's located in me. It's located in me. No.
In my body.
No. It's not located in your body. And even in your experience right now, it's not located in your body. Look at in your experience right now, if you think what you are actually, let's think about it. What you're actually experiencing right now at this moment is whatever you're perceiving. That's what you're experiencing. You're experiencing, and I'll say one more thing, you're experiencing yourself and whatever you're perceiving. Right? Right? Now, whatever you're perceiving, is there a part of it that is more or less in consciousness? What you're perceiving is whatever is coming into your sense perception. We'll forget about the different moods and things that go on in the mind. But whatever is coming into your sense perception right now, that is what is known to you at this moment. That's your experience. It's not just this body. This body is part of this total experience that you're having. The sense organs are part of the total experience. The mind is part of the total experience. Right? So now in this total experience that you're having, much more is included in it than the body. The other thing is this total experience that you're having in consciousness or not? Is it known to you or not? Yes, it is known to me. Does it exist? Yes, it exists. That means the sat-chit, you know, which is your being, I am sat, I exist, I am consciousness. Right? That sat-chit, there's nothing in your experience that's away from it.
So sat-chit is part of aparoksha jnanam.
Sat-chit, yes, that is the aparoksha jnanam. But then in reference to this experience, every moment of experience that I have, the sat-chit is the clay of the pot. It's the water of the ocean. So here the sat-chit is what is the pervasive being of the entirety of my experience, which is much more than just this body, mind, sense organs.
I was just going to say, I have a little trouble with this phrase, away from it.
Nothing is away from it.
Yeah, nothing is away from it. Because again, that seems to set up a certain duality in my mind, to say nothing's away from it. Because everything really is it.
That's right. So if we want to say like that, but if I say when I'm talking like that, what I'm comparing it to the experience of being the body. Because when I'm saying I am this body, then that pain is away from me, right?
From the body.
Everything is away from me. You're all away from me. There's distance between us. But from the standpoint of consciousness, there's no distance. There's nothing that in this room that is away from consciousness. So I'm talking like that. Yeah.
So you're saying that there's no division.
There's no division. There's no separation. You can't separate consciousness or existence from anything in your experience. Then we say, well, then we would go from there. Does anything in your experience have existence of its own? Well, no, because everything is infinitely divisible, but what always remains is the Sat-Chit that never changes in any way. So then say you start understanding this, then you say, well, then the Sat-Chit, which is me, the me, is not located. Everything exists in it. It's not located. So now you just let yourself be relaxed for a moment and recognize your own presence, the me. Is it located? No. It's not held somewhere. It's me. It's not located. Everything is in it, but it's not located in the body. And so then you can walk around, as this body walks around within time and space, and, you know, if you can just relax your mind and make your mind silent, you can realize that Atma is not walking around. The self is not walking around. There's no place that it isn't. And it's not moving. So now, say you have, you know, and I have you imagine the meadow imagination. You are pervasive to the meadow. Right, wherever the meadow is, you are. You're free of the meadow, because in the meadow goes time and space of the meadow, belongs to the meadow, belongs to the projection. Yourself is not big or small based on that Maya projection. You just are. Without time or space, free of duality, your being is non-dual. Then this meadow projection comes, but wherever the meadow projection comes, you are, because you are the self, the reality that is. You are what is. And so the meadow projection comes, then wherever the meadow projection is, that isness, which is you, is there. Right? And so now what you can do is to kind of understand your all-pervasiveness is play around by having a projection of a meadow or a scene of some sort. Just in your mind, forget about this Ishwara Srishti. Just use it, do it mentally. Imagine a meadow, imagine the ocean, imagine taking a walk in nature, whatever the imagination is, and then notice that your being, that me, is the self of the meadow. That it's not contained by the person walking in the meadow. It's not contained by the birds or the trees or the different people. All of those exist in me. Like my me, the me is not contained. So you can see it in an imagination. Once you can see that in an imagination, then this is no different than an imagination in a sense. I mean, it's Ishwara's imagination. And now here, this body, mind, sense organs are in this imagination. If you have an imagination of a meadow, you have body, minds walking around in the meadow, and you're the self of the meadow. Now here's Ishwara Srishti, and here's body, minds, etc., walking around, right, in Ishwara's creation. You're still the self of this. That's the whole knowledge. Atma is Brahman. So you can play with your own Ishwaratvam in reference to your imaginations and see, understand, have the aparoksha jnanam of yourself as being the self of the imagination, being changeless, being free, being the very Sat-Chit of the imagination, and then come out into with your sense organs to experience Ishwara Srishti, and there's nothing different in terms of the relationship of the Atma of yourself, which is Brahman, to this experience of the creation. Right? There's no difference at all. So it's easier for you to kind of go back and forth to your own little Ishwara of your imagination, to being a jiva, within Ishwara's imagination.
So the isness isn't geographical.
It's not geographical, and there's only one isness. And the isness of you is the isness of Brahman. That's what it is. And that's aparoksha. Do you see how it would be aparoksha in reference to an imagination?
Yeah, I got held up with something you'd said a little earlier. So you said, like, just look at the room and how it's not as if I'm here seeing this room, but all of this room is in me. So I guess the problem is, so I perceive, you know, you and I hear everyone through a particular sense, and I feel my body through a different sense. So somehow
sense of touch. Those are still sense organs. The sense of touch, through the sense of touch you feel your body.
Right.
Through the sense of hearing, you hear the sound. Right? Through the sense of taste, you taste. The sense of smell, smell. Sense of sight, see. But these are all sense organs that allow you. See, if you're a quadriplegic or something, you wouldn't have any sense of your body being here. You'd see it, but you wouldn't feel it. That's the sense of touch. So
right.
That's what anchors you, though. That's what sense of touch is, the hardest one.
Hmm.
Because it gives you that sense of... you pervading this body, and it doesn't extend, right?
Yeah, that seems to be,
yeah.
I mean, that's where it sort of stops, is because somehow it's so overpowering that my sense of touch is, you know, goes through this, that I just feel
that's right.
I'm this. So.
That's why you need to do a little viveka, you know? That's why sometimes when we do meditation, we first become totally aware of this physical body, how you feel the whole body. It's like a statue, which you're completely aware of, and then become aware of your toe and your other toe, you know, and notice that in order for you to even be aware of your body, in fact, it's not a given. To be aware of your body means your mind is using your sense of touch or sight to be aware of it. Like, for instance, if I say, be aware of your left earlobe right now. You weren't aware of that before, probably. I've just brought your consciousness there, so your mind, using your sense of touch, goes there and feels it, right? How many times are you not aware, using your sense of mind, not using or connected with a sense of touch at all? Like if you're reading a book or driving a car or talking to somebody. So you really, we will always be grounding ourselves here, you know, because the sense organs are here and whatnot. This whole sutra sharira is abiding here. But really, it's not, your body is an object of your awareness through the five sense organs.
But,
you
know, but in the jnani now, these sense organs, something like what he was kind of getting at, I think also what I was hearing is, you know, your sense organs are actually interpreted, like what comes through the sense organs, they're still functioning and doing their thing, but there's a different kind of relationship that you have internally to the sense organs because you're not identifying with them anymore, right? It's being like who you really are.
Not as being who you really are, because yourself is recognized. It's aparoksha. But then, I mean, we use our sense organs, we use our body, and we are in this what we call empirical vyavahara, and this empirical reality, just behaving as any jnani or ajnani, in terms of, you know, transactional reality. But the difference is that I have self-knowledge, too. All of these things, as long as I have a body, it's functioning. I'm still within duality functioning. But I see the duality as mitya. I see it as Ishwara. And myself is aparoksha to me. I know who I am. That aviveka, that lack of discrimination, is now not there. You know, so...
But when you have when you do have an upadhi, you do have a sense of me being contained there.
Yeah.
And at the same time...
And the same time not.
And not. So that way you get to experience me both contained and not contained.
You experience yourself as this body, mind, sense organs, and you experience yourself as free from that.
Yeah.
And that's the satyam mitya, right?
Mm.
I am the self of this, right? This body is totally dependent on me for its being. I am its very self, but I am totally free of it.
Mm.
Both things you experience. This is me, but I am free of it.
But isn't there also a little more that you know, burnt seed ego? I mean, that
oh, yeah, definitely.
Identification.
Yeah, because you know yourself, you know the source of Ananda, you know all of this is Ishwara.
Right, but you have that burnt seed ahankara, which sort of does have an identification with the body in a way. I mean,
yeah, there's an a functional identification.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But yeah, yeah, there's a functional identification, but not one based in your knowledge. And your knowledge is aparoksha. It's not indirect knowledge.
But that functional identity, though, it seems contained or limited.
No, the body is limited, yeah. And it always will be. And it has a sense of touch. So this body is limited, the mind is limited, the sense organs are limited. That's their nature. And so that's the containment. The body is contained, the mind is contained, the sense organs are contained. But now you see this containment a little bit different. It's limited. I see the body, the mind, the sense organs are limited because they are. But they're also part and parcel of Ishvara. So there's that level of appreciation too.
But when we have the, like, identification with the self as the body, like, that's, I mean, to me that sort of indicates that pratibandhakas, you know what I mean? I mean, it's like sometimes you really feel like, okay, I'm the self, there's no doubt, you know, all this is the self, really. And then sometimes there's this, like, identification, again, like, I'm this body, I'm this whatever you're thinking. It seems to me that comes from stuff that just hasn't been processed or something.
Well, maybe there's more. Just a practical burnt seed identification that is just natural to having a new body. Then there's the identification where there's the projection of ananda onto the world and having to have things be a certain way. Like, I need this to be like this in order for me to be happy. I need the body to be like this. It goes on and on endlessly. So that's where the pratibandhakas come in.
So that's a lack of vairagya.
It's a lack of vairagya. It's a lack of clarity. Mm. So in those areas, that's where you... Those are sadhanas. Those are the sadhanas. You know, and that just goes on. Becomes something that you learn how to have that be a sadhana. Becomes second nature for that to be a sadhana. When that type of a reaction comes up, or that type of a hurt comes up, then to you it's not just a hurt or a reaction, it's where you have to bring your understanding and bring your knowledge. And why bother? Well, you don't have to bother, unless the pain that it's causing is bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the pain that it's causing is bothering you and you want to kind of, you know, resolve that, then you bring your knowledge to it. It requires some work. If it's something that you can just flick off and it doesn't matter one way or the other, then, you know, do what you want. But when it's hurting you, then, you know, that's where sadhana is required. You can have things annoy you or this or that, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference. It's not hurting your knowledge. It's not hurting you. You can easily, that shamadham is there, you can easily move on. It doesn't require that we have to sit down and do a big process over it.
Yeah.
You know when it requires that.
Because it hurts.
Because you're suffering.
So in Yani, experiencing with their senses, everything what we are experiencing now, is it actually a different experience, or is it just that the background screen on which all this arises is simply creates somehow a different kind of context or nuance to the sensory experience?
Well, the sensory experience is going to be the same, but the context and the knowledge in which it's taking place is much different.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's also a different type of mind. And by that I mean not a different... That's not the right words. There's a relaxation of mind and a strength of mind, because the knowledge itself gives so much strength. You know? So there's a different type of shanti or stability in which all of that is happening. And even all of it's happening on multi-dimensional things are going on, multi-levels. The mind is very multi-leveled, you know, what do you call it, where we're doing more than multitasking, multi-leveled. But all of those things that are going on are, if that jnana nishtha is there, is still all taking place within the buddhi, right? The knowledge, the buddhi which has knowledge.
Mm.
Right? And so there's a certain clarity that the manas, the mind, can't get behind that clarity. What I mean by that, if the manas gets behind the clarity, then the clarity is kind of kicked out the window and the manas is, you know, taking over. Well, there comes a time when that the manas, the mind with all of its emotions and complexes and feelings and whatnot, can't displace the buddhi. And that's jnana nishtha. Because it's the buddhi that has the jnana nishtha. The atma is always the same. It doesn't have jnana nishtha or not jnana nishtha. It's just atma. Because the buddhi is the one that has to have that clarity, that recognition. And then the atma is me, the one that's illuminating that clarity or lack of it. And as that jnana nishtha starts becoming jnana nishtha, when you're needing some sadhana or needing to become clear, that's being lit up also by the you that is remains unaffected as the atma. You see? Yeah. You see?
Very good.
It's a difference between seeing and seeing.
yeah, that's true.
There's
seeing, and then there's seeing, and the first seeing was also seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then the next scene is more seeing in bigger context.
Yeah, this teaching, this Gita is almost like just a kind of a, listening to a story.
It is a story.
It's all a story.
This is my pun. The story starts out, "Woe is me," and then it ends up, "Whoa, it's me."
That's good.